We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
From Learfield, this is the CU Buffs Insider. Here's the voice of the Buffaloes, Mark Johnson.
Hi again, everybody. It's our Buffs Insider weekly podcast here at CUBuffs.com, along with Neil Welk, one of the writers from, well, the writer. He is the writer. There is no others. He is the writer for CUBuffs.com. I'm voice of the Buffs. I'm just one of the voices of the Buffs, Mark Johnson. As the Buffaloes are getting ready for a road trip to Corvallis, Oregon this weekend to take on a Beavers team, that's had a little bit of controversy and certainly some, shall we say, they made news this week. We'll talk more about that here in just a minute. Of course, Colorado coming off that loss last week in a shootout, 45-42. The Buffs fall to Arizona. And, Neil, we'll start right there. And I said at one point in the second half of that ball game, as we're going to commercial break, we'll be back. Not a lick of defense being played in this one. Over 1,100 yards of offense and nearly 90 points to score in that contest. What do you come away from that ball game thinking?
That would have been a great basketball game. Last possession wins. I mean, last basket wins, but that's what it came down to. Colorado could not stop Arizona quarterback Khalil Tate, and we've talked about it endlessly for the last week, and just a spectacular performance. They could not come up with one stop. They needed one stop down the end. Colorado's offense came alive, looked terrific, I thought. I thought the offense played very well, but certainly overshadowed by Arizona's quarterback, and puts the Buffs behind a big eight ball right here.
Yeah, without question. Here they sit now, 3-3, 0-3 in Pac-12 conference play. I thought Gary Barnett had a very funny and great comment when they were doing the television stand-up after the game. He said the biggest mistake Colorado made in that ball game was knocking Brandon Dawkins out of the game.
Oh, no doubt. And, you know, they've done that twice. It's very bizarre. 2 years ago, Arizona comes here. They knock out quarterback Anu Solomon, the starter. They bring in a backup, I can't remember the kid's name, Jared Randall. They bring him in. He runs the Buffs ragged. Arizona scores three straight touchdowns in the fourth quarter. They overcome a deficit, and they beat Colorado. It's what happened here again. They knocked out the starting quarterback, and here comes the backup, and he runs them ragged. And so the moral to the story is don't hurt the starting quarterback.
Okay, let's reset this thing now. Here they sit at 3-3, 0-3 in Pac-12 conference play. Is it time to panic?
No, I don't think it's time to panic. I think what this team has to do is figure out they need to go win a game. I mean, you quit talking about the Pac-12 South. You quit talking about being a contender. You quit talking about bowl eligibility, all those things, and you go out and you win one game. And then you take it from there and you try and win another one. And I think 6 games left, this team certainly has a chance to do some good things. This team has a chance to be a good team. I think there's a good team on the verge of emerging from this bunch. It just hasn't shown up. They've lost 2 one-possession games, and now they got to go win a game. I think you don't talk about anything else being a contender or bowl games. I think you try and go win a game.
Philip Lindsay was phenomenal in the game. He had 41 carries, Colorado record, by the way, for attempts, 281 yards, and 4 touchdowns. And nobody's talking about it because of what Khalil Tate did in that contest. But I did a little pregame shot with him this week that we'll have in the pregame tomorrow in Corvallis. And I thought it was, if not the best, one of Philip's better games he's ever had.
Oh, it was Phillip's best game. It was one of the best games by a Colorado running back I've ever seen, because there weren't a lot of big gains in there. He had 145-yard gain, but the rest of it was just a grind. I mean, Phillip was pounding it out. 41 carries, he got thrown for a loss once. Out of 41 carries, he had one negative rush. After that, it was all positive yardage. Phillip is, if you're a Colorado football fan, you are proud of Philip Lindsay. I mean, he makes you proud. That's the kind of kid you want in your program, and I just can't stress that enough, because I was stunned as he was walking off the field the other night. He had a big cut on his arm, and it wasn't bleeding black and gold, and I swear to God, I thought that's what was going to be coming out. But no, Philip is just one of those kids that makes you proud to support the Colorado program, because he's everything you want.
And I guess just to back up what you're saying there, did you see that? I know you were in there. I was not. I was still down doing our radio post game. But afterward, Ryan Mohler came in, sat down, representing the defense, made a couple of comments, and Philip came in, sits down, and a reporter asked him about becoming the all-purpose yardage leader in Colorado history. He surpassed Speedy Stewart in the ballgame against Arizona. And Phil's response was, number one, I don't want to talk about that. We lost this game. I don't want to talk about something individual. And as he's wrapping up his answer, he looks over at Ryan, sticks his hand, he says, Ryan, I love you, shakes his hand. He said, basically, now let's get back to work. So, again, not only the way he competes and carries himself on the field, but the way he leads off the field is why he's going to go down as one of our favorites of all time.
Exactly. That's, you know, his legacy is cemented just with his numbers. All-time leading, you know, all-purpose yards leader, one of the top 4, 5, 6 rushers in CU history, has the most carries in one game, 4th best rushing performance in CU history, and that's a pretty big history. Yeah. But his legacy is going to include far more than that. I mean, this is a kid who came to Colorado, loves the program, was here during the bad times, helped him get back to the good times last year, and I guarantee you he's going to do his best to make sure those good times aren't over this year.
Yeah.
It's just who he is.
Yeah, without question. So let's stay on the offensive side of the football before we kind of dissect defensively what went down against Arizona. The offensive line, I think that was its best game this season. Have they found their rhythm that they've been desperately searching for the first 5 games?
You know, I certainly think they took a big step. I think they took a big step last week, and I was talking with Clayton Adams earlier in the week, and he said, you know, a big part of that is once they got that running game going a little bit, they start feeling like they're getting physical at the line of scrimmage, and they're dominating the guys across for them. Phillip starts gaining yards, starts going downhill. He's coming back to the huddle. He's talking people up. He said that makes that offensive line want to work even harder. So, yeah, it's just it feeds off of the whole thing feeds off of each other. And I think the whole offense looked, you know, much better. I thought Steven Montez played better. But, yeah, the O-line, certainly in the second half, I thought took a big step forward.
I was going to say, they gave up 4 sacks. Those were all in the first half. So they kind of found a rhythm. And really from middle of the second quarter on is when I thought they really were playing their best football. Isaac Miller started right tackle in that contest, a Longmont young man. I thought he handled himself very well out there.
Isaac had a really good game. He's another one that in that second half played really well. The first half, you could tell he was Arizona went after him a couple times, ran a couple of blitzes off that side, brought some people off the edge, some stuff they hadn't seen before, according to Clayton Adams. He got beat a couple times early. After that, he really settled down, and I thought he, you know, had a very good game. And was part of an offensive line that played pretty well overall. Mike McIntyre said earlier in the week that barring an injury or anything like that, it'll be the same starting 5 this week.
You mentioned Steven. He's gone now 71 straight passes without throwing an interception. And last week we sat here on this very same podcast and talked about, you know, him maybe finding himself, playing a little bit better against UCLA. I thought he took another step the other night.
Yeah, and the offensive coaches are excited about what they've seen from Steven over the last two games. I talked to several of them this week, you know, the offensive coordinators, Clayton Adams, and they're all saying what they saw from Steven is just a maturation process. He's getting much more comfortable in the pocket. He's making better decisions. He's learning that a five-yard pass is fine rather than an 80-yard incompletion. He's learning that, you know, about those kind of things. If you think about it, the last two games, he's not come really close to an interception. After the three against Washington, he's made much better decisions. And he's become, you know, a game manager and a quarterback along with being a great athlete back there. And they really like his progress. There's still a ton of optimism about Steven Montez for the next couple of years.
How much concern, though, being that we're still sitting here talking about it a week later, that Colorado is one of 12 teams in FBS that has not hit a play of 50 yards or longer. And by the way, there is another Pac-12 team there. Utah's in that category as well. With his arm, with the dynamic receivers the Buffaloes have, that in and of itself kind of puts pressure on this team because the guys are so good. They've had so many of those kind of things. I mean, heck, Shea Fields had, what, two of them that were a very long touchdown, 160-some-yard touchdown last year against the same Oregon State team. But the fact that they haven't hit the long ball, I know it's starting to weigh on these guys.
Yeah, it's definitely a source of frustration. Mike McIntyre used that word. Brian Lindgren used that word. Steven Montez used that word. And Shea Fields used that word this week. Frustration, frustrating, frustrated. So I think that it's certainly weighing on them. It's bothering them. But I think it's close. I mean, and they kept on saying the offense was close to a breakout game. We saw that last week. I would not be surprised to see a couple of long balls I've seen connect this week against Oregon State. People are taking it away from them. The one thing about taking away that long ball is it opens it up for Phillip Lindsay to run. And if I tell you what, if they don't hit another long ball and Phillip Lindsay can get 280 yards every game from here on out, I'll take that 280.
I'm with you on that one. Hey, by the way, my list of unknowns has become shortened by one now. I still have the Loch Ness Monster. I've got Sasquatch UFOs. But we have now found, and we've had a tight end sighting, not once, but twice last week, did a tight end catch a touchdown, catch reception for the Colorado Buffaloes.
Well, that's the most amazing statistic of the year. We are halfway through the season. And if I would have told you at the beginning of the season that Chris Bounds would have as many touchdown catches as Shea Fields, what would you have said, Mark?
Drug test time for Neil Welk.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, and that's, I think it's a great addition to the offense. And what you saw last week was they brought in those tight ends to help block for the running game. They wanted to add a little pass protection. They wanted to get a little more power on the running game. Certainly that helped. You bring Fraser and Bounds in. That opened up that running game. That gave them a little bit of boost up front. What it also did is it brought in an extra receiver there. And those, you know, Arizona's sitting there thinking Chris Bounds, that's all he's going to do is block. Well, all of a sudden, he went out for a pass, not once but twice, caught two touchdown passes, and that's something that defenses are going to have to pay attention to now the rest of the year.
And I told Chris here a few weeks ago, I had him on the radio show, and I said, hey, I'm campaigning for you, so I don't know what I get for finally getting him a couple of touchdown catches, but I'm glad it finally happened. Good to see number 43 making a couple of catches out there. All right, let's flip over to the defensive side. Yes, Khalil Tate, 327 yards rushing, came in and just exploded on the Buffaloes. I liked Mike McIntyre's comments a couple of days ago. Somebody asked him about having to worry about that this season. He said, I don't think many teams have a Khalil Tate sitting there somewhere. But with that being said, what concerns linger as a result of that?
Well, I think the concern for me last week was is I had been impressed up to that point with the defense that DJ Elliott was putting on the field. I thought they had controlled people. They controlled Josh Rosen better than just about anybody had. They played well against Washington if you take away the two touchdowns that the offense gave Washington. And they had kept Colorado in every game, you know, up to that point. But last week, the defense, that's the first time I've seen the defense completely helpless. And that's a bothersome, unsettling feeling, I think, for any D coordinator, for any coach to watch that happen. As Mike said, they're not going to see another Khalil Tate, but they will see Luke Falk. They are going to see Sam Darnold. They are going to see some more guys like that. So they need to be ready for that. But that's why this next game is very important for this defense to find its footing and get back in a hurry and make sure that was more of an aberration than a trend. Because if they give up a lot of yards and a lot of points this week, then doubt starts to step in.
Well, and what's disturbing about that is, listen, Khalil Tate is a dynamic athlete, undoubtedly. It was the inability to corral him, to, when you got a shot at him, wrap him up. this hasn't been, I wouldn't say it's been a great tackling team, but it's been a good enough tackling team. Sound, that's a good word to use. And that's what was kind of, I think, disheartening about what we saw with Khalil Tate is, I mean, you know, it was like the greased pig. They just couldn't seem to get a hand on him.
Yeah, and what you saw was that's the first time, you know, Colorado's defensive line was just completely overmatched and just was not part of that game. They did not stop the run a lot in that game at all. And Mike McIntyre pointed that out, that even against Washington, you know, it wasn't until late in the third quarter, fourth quarter, that Washington finally started to run the ball with authority on them. This was the first team that ran it from the very beginning and never stopped. And when you looked at Colorado's defensive line, that's the first time I'd seen them just completely get overpowered and appear to be helpless. And it's like you said, what has been a pretty sound tackling team did not tackle well at all. It was just a breakdown across the board. And you hope that it was just one of those days and that it doesn't turn into one of those months and one of those years.
Yeah, amen to that. Hey, one quick more note from that ball game, and that was that 19-play drive that Colorado had. 9 minutes and 34 seconds. You don't see a lot of that in college football. I love Philip Lindsay after the game. By the way, in that 19-play drive, he had 14 carries. And when asked about it, he said, I didn't notice. He was kind of busy, apparently.
Philip, somebody asked him after the game, you know, you had 14 carries on that drive. You had 40 carries. He said, you know, I don't even remember. I didn't notice. All I wanted to do was, you know, get one more carry so we could win the game. But, 14 carries for 80 yards on one drive, 41 for the night, and a 19-play drive. That's a really nice thing to see. They had five drives that covered 75 yards and a sixth drive that covered 85. So in terms of consistency, that's everything you wanted to see from that offense. Steven Montez was good on third down. They made some nice plays. But, again, you needed a defensive stop somewhere in that bunch.
You look at that drive, by the way, just for the record books, in terms of number of plays, it was the fourth longest drive in Colorado history. Longest, by the way, 22 in a game against Kansas State back in 1985. From a timing standpoint, it was also the fourth longest, 9 minutes and 34 seconds. The longest all time was 10 minutes and 7 seconds. That was a game with Miami back in 1961, by the way. So
I didn't cover that one.
I don't believe
game.
You.
I wasn't at that 61. 85 game I was. I can remember that game.
Once again, just proving how old he is in the middle of the Buffs Insider podcast. Let's kind of look forward now. Okay, you go to take on the Oregon State Beavers this weekend. It's been a tumultuous week for them. Gary Anderson steps down in the middle of a season, kind of shocks everybody, leaving $12.4 million on the table. I don't know what this means. I mean, you would think from an emotional standpoint, the team kind of rises up. And they love their coach and want to support him a little bit. And even though he's not going to be there, play well. But what are the Buffs walking into at Reser Stadium on Saturday, do you think?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's a very emotional game for Oregon State. Those players were recruited by Gary Anderson. They like Gary Anderson by all accounts. You know, they want to prove that they can win one for their coach. You know, he's still their coach in their minds, and they want to go out there and prove that, that he has a good program, that he recruited good players. So there's going to be an emotional lift on their part. The other little interesting twist is the interim staff there, the interim head coach, he's got nothing to lose, right? He has nothing to lose. You have no idea what he might do with an offense in a week. You have no idea what he might do with a defense in a week. I mean, he might try some crazy things. So you're walking into a little bit of an unknown in that regard. They might trot out some stuff that nobody's seen just because they're 0-3 also in the Pac-12. They need a win just as bad as this team does. So I think it's a big emotional game for Oregon State. Colorado has to be prepared for it, and they have to be prepared for stuff they haven't seen.
I would be shocked, though, if we don't see a galvanized effort by the Buffaloes in Saturday.
No doubt. I think this team, Mike McIntyre said it today, said, you know, they're not demoralized, they're mad. And now they have to be able to focus that anger and focus it in the right direction and go out and play well. I thought they'd play well last week. I really did, and the offense did. The offense played really well. Defense obviously did not have a good game, but I still think this team there's a good team waiting to emerge from this bunch. I really sincerely believe that if they put together a good offensive and defensive performance, you know, down the stretch, six games left, that this can still be a good team and have a, you know, a very nice season and leave a good mark on this program.
Yeah, without question. It's a bowl football team, in my view, as I know it is with you as well. Hey, by the way, that's a 2 o'clock kickoff on Saturday from Reister Stadium, Mountain Time, we're talking about. Gary Barnett, Bobby Pasavento will be with us for the first time on the sideline this week. And yours truly will kick it off at 12 noon Mountain Time on the Colorado Football Network with the Buffalo Stampede pregame show. Speaking of coaches leaving, this is outside the Buff family, but inside, if you will. Chris Naoli, one of the great Buffs of all time, phenomenal offensive lineman, the offensive line coach at the University of Hawaii, last week missed two practices. Speculation bubbled up, and then he did not make the trip with the team to the mainland to take on Nevada over the weekend. He released a statement through his lawyer saying that he was stepping down because of a disagreement in philosophy in handling disciplinary actions within the team, which they've had a bunch of this season. You were around when Chris was here. Number one, he was about the baddest man on the planet and kind of showing his Buff heart there, saying basically, I'm not going to forfeit my morals and ethics and how we do things. I'm just going to leave this program.
Chris did things the right way. That was always the way he's done things. It's all the way he always played. And, you know, I just know a little bit about what I've heard about the story, but it doesn't surprise me about Chris. That's just the way he is. I think he's a very, you know, he was always a stand-up guy here. And you're right, he was a bad dude. He was just a bad dude. I mean... Whenever the other team had a great, you know, nose tackle or a nose guard, because Chris played guard here, and they never worried, because they knew Chris Naoli would take care of him. And he went on and had a 10-12 year, you know, NFL career, was a great player, and never had much to say, was always that quiet guy. And you were very respectful when you were a reporter and you needed to talk to Chris. It was, sir, do you have a couple of minutes, because I'd like to ask you a couple of questions. But no, he was a good guy, and like I said, just a bad dude.
Would you say he was a one-man double team?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they, you know, usually you have to double team a big nose guard, you know, because you want to put your center and your guard on him. Chris could double team somebody by himself.
He was a phenomenal player, and so there's just a little bit of Buff news from outside the football program right now. Let's just segue a little bit. By the time this Buffs Insider podcast is released, the CU basketball team will be in San Francisco for Media Day. And we'll find out eventually with the media polls and all that kind of stuff where the Buffs are picked. But by this point in time, 2 weeks in, a little excitement brewing about this basketball team?
I it's going to be a fun team to watch. I don't know how many games they're going to win. I have no idea, you know, how they're going to play when they hit the Pac-12, but it's going to be a fun team to watch develop just because of all the young guys they've got. You know, you've got some freshmen that you know are going to come in and play. I want to see what George King does in his senior year. I want to see what Torrey Miller has, see what Dom Collier does. There are eight people we've never seen in a Colorado uniform. So, you know, eight players right there, naming right. We don't know what he's going to do, Dallas Walton. So it's going to be a fun team to watch develop. And this is just from the years past, Tad Boyle's teams play well when they have a chip on their shoulder. When nobody expects them to play well, Tad Boyle loves that chip. And I tell you what, they're going to have a big chip, because I'm guessing they're going to be picked somewhere 8, 9, 10 in this league. In fact, I talked to McKinley Wright last week about that, and he says, I hope they pick us 10th. He said, I want them to pick us 10th, because he says, we're going to be a lot better than that. We're going to surprise some people. But he says, I hope they pick us 10th. And I was like, okay. And I think he might get his wish. But I think this team's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
I think there's a little bit, and teams generally will be a reflection of their coach. I think knowing Tad, that you and I both got to know him very well over the course of his time here, I think he likes to take that stuff personally a little bit. And oh, yeah, you think so? Well, let me show you what was really going to happen. So it sounds like those guys are maybe taking on his personality a little bit.
No, I think they will. I think he's probably talking to them very quietly about it. Nobody's expecting anything out of this team, and there's good reason. I mean, they lost a lot of guys. They lost, you know, 2-3 senior starters, most of their scoring, their rebounding, all the stuff from last year. So nobody's going to be expecting much out of him. And that's, you know, that plays right up into Tad's, you know, coaching. He likes that. You know, when nobody expects anything, he can rally those guys around, and it's one for all. And I think this team has the potential to surprise some people. I don't think they're going to win the Pac-12, but I think they're going to surprise some people and be better than some people think.
While these meetings are going on, wouldn't you like to be a fly in the wall in that room when all those coaches and the commissioner get together? Considering what's happening in college athletics, there's two programs, Arizona, USC, have been brought into this whole FBI mess. Wouldn't you like to be sitting in that room?
I'd like to. I am curious to see what action, if any, the Pac-12 takes. I really think that there's something there that, you know, there was a time when conferences had their own rules that and they could invoke suspensions and they could
kind of police themselves a little bit.
Exactly, and that's kind of gone away over the years. But if there's any time that you think that the conference would step in and say, you know what, we need to make sure that this is addressed, I think this would be a time, and I'm probably stepping out of bounds as an employee of the University of Colorado here, but I'd like to see Larry Scott step up and at least, make a strong statement and say that we're not going to have that kind of stuff happen in our conference and issue some, not just some guidelines, but, maybe issue some punishment.
I understand that it's not the NCAA, it's a much more ominous acronym, an FBI that's overseeing all this right now and is kind of guiding all this. Are you surprised, not just the Pac-12, and who knows, maybe by the time this comes out, the league's gotten together, maybe there will be some sort of statement for the league. Are you surprised the NCAA has been so closed-mouthed about everything that's going on?
I think the NCAA, just taking a guess here, I have no inside information, no more than you do, but I'm not sure the NCAA isn't waiting to see how many other shoes are going to drop. Because that,
which is an interesting choice of words, considering the fact that Adidas, by the way, and sneaker companies are involved. So waiting to what shoe is going to drop? I like that.
just got lucky on a choice of words there. But you know, the FBI did say that the investigation is not over with. They made that very clear when they had their press conference a couple of weeks ago. And so, you know, my guess is the NCAA is very quietly sitting back and going, just waiting to see that if other programs might be implicated and to see what the overall, result of this investigation yields, because there could be more problems out there. There could be more programs that are brought to light for this. So, I'm wait and see what the NCAA does, but it will be interesting.
To back up what Neil's saying right now, just keep in mind, and again, just throwing this out there as an observation, the gentleman with Adidas recently, year and a half ago, came over from Nike. And so I think that's what Neil's getting at right there. There's got to be some connections, and so there are a lot of other programs out there as to what was going on prior to the guy who's at the center of this was with a different shoe company, so that'll be interesting to watch. But certainly that's going to be much of the talk of the early part of the college basketball season. This weekend, it's all about the football team, the Buffaloes in Corvallis to take on the Beavers. Again, you can check out Neil's pregame story, if you will, his Fast Five at CUBus.com. Check that out. Of course, join us on the Colorado Football Network. Gary Barnett, Bobby Passavento, and yours truly will hit the air at 12 noon on the network and all the affiliates across the great state of Colorado. The kickoff between the Buffs and the Beavers from Reser Stadium at 2 p.m. Make it 2:07 exactly on Saturday afternoon. For Neil Welk of CUBus.com, I'm voice of the Buffs, Mark Johnson. Thanks for joining us this week on the Buffs Insider.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.